Hi, welcome back to the Trails Foundation of Northern Utah's It's About the Trails podcast. I'm the host and executive director here at the Trails Foundation. My name's Eric Manning. The It's About the Trails podcast will bring you up-to-date trail information in Northern Utah. We're going to be talking to guests like we're doing today, bringing some trail education, etiquette, and many other fun and important topics. So today is episode number 4 of the new podcast, and I am pleased to bring on the board chair of the Trails Foundation Northern Utah, Mike Appleby. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for agreeing to be a guest on the podcast.
My pleasure.
So this is episode 4, and you are the board chair. So what I thought we would start with is just kind of like a quick bio, if you will, of who is Mike Appleby, and then we can kind of really get after it. But who's Mike Appleby, the TFNU board chair?
Well, Mike Appleby is an avid trail user. That's probably the most important thing about me. But from a background perspective, I've been in Utah since 89. Came here with the Navy and spent 24 years in the Navy, and then retired here and went to work for iOmega for 14 years, and then really retired and started seriously hiking once or twice a week ever since I retired. So my wife and I are big trail users and love it here.
So how did you get? So when you first came on to the board and found out about, it was Weber Pathways at the time. How did you become and how did you get involved with Weber Pathways?
Well, you know, as a trail user, I occasionally saw a sign here and there that said, you know, this trail brought to you by Weber Pathways, or I saw a sign that said, you know, if you want to donate a few pennies, you might get an inch or two of trail. And I just felt like at some point after you retire and you're out here enjoying life that, you know, you need to do something to give back to the community. And I looked around and thought, why not do something that not only benefits the community, but maybe benefits me, and just happened to stumble into a board member. And I just asked, how do I do that? And first thing you know, I was elected to the board. So that's how I got here. And it's been great.
How long have you been on the board in one capacity or another? Because the way our board's set up is you end up being the co-chair before you become the chair generally. And then after you're the chair, you roll off for a year as the past chair. But how long have you been on the board as a board member?
I've been on the board since 87. So that's this will be 7 years at the end of this year. I'm in my 7th year right now.
In what year? What year did you say?
17.
17, okay. Did I say 27? I thought you said 87.
No.
And I thought,
no,
man, that's a long time. 17. So 2017.
I came on in like February 17. Immediately jumped into being told I had a great way of helping by running part of the Trail Fest. So I got broken in really fast.
So what's your experience been like being on the board? I mean, you have been here for a little while, so you've seen probably a lot of change. Obviously, it was Weber Pathways, now the Trails Foundation over the Utah, so that's some change. But what's your experience been like on the board? Is it what you were thinking it might be when you first started?
I think it's pretty close to what I thought it would be. I mean, it's a group of people that are super passionate about trails. And wanted to make sure that the trails here in northern Utah are maintained, and we have as many as we can possibly have by having more if it's possible. And so I think from that perspective, the board and the organization were exactly what I was looking for. It's been a lot of changes since I came on the board. You know, we've got a new ED. You've come on since we started this, and we've had the staff has turned over. We've added new staff. From a pure board perspective, we went from having a 20 to 25 person board to having closer to a 15 person board, trying to just get the right number of people on the board. So that's been a different deal. I've seen some focus change too. You know, we've gone, when I first came on the board, it was primarily trail building, and just making sure that trails were at the forefront of people's minds. And you know, as we've gone through time in the first couple of years I was here, we really woke up to the fact that trails maintenance is really, from a pure trails perspective, it's really, in some cases, more about trails maintenance than it is about trail buildings because of the opportunity and the need. And so I've been really happy with the fact that that's really where we've started going now. With we're trying to figure out how we can keep these trails in good shape so for the number of people that are using them. I've also seen over the years, I've been, this last 6-7 years, a pretty massive increase in the number of people using the trails here in northern Utah. I mean, the mountain bike that stuff has just taken off, even in the wintertime, fat tire biking. My wife and I used to never see fat tire bikers when we're out snowshoeing. Now you see them all the time. So it's good. I mean, but it's different.
Yeah. So with, we kind of talk about, the stuff that you dealt with becoming on the board and the change, not the change, but maybe the increase in trail maintenance. You're savvy when it comes to the trails. Like, you understand the trails. You know, one of the things I always find interesting, we just had our trail mixer, our first ever trail mixer last week. What I find interesting is people not understanding, or maybe not knowing, maybe that's a better way, not knowing, that the trails are in different areas, whether it's private property, Weber State, Ogden City, Weber County, U.S. Forest Service, the power company. Is that something, when you became more active in the trails, was that surprising to you? Just with, like, you can go on a mile of trail on a BST and there's 7 property owners, where there's some places. I mean, North Fork Park's a great example. It's all owned by one spot. Park City's fortunate enough. They can kind of go do what they need to do when they want to do it. But what was that something for you that was, as you got more into it, was kind of surprising?
Yeah, I think so, because I don't think as just a trail user you think about that sort of stuff. I mean, the trail's there. You just walk down the trail, and it's not like there's signage on the trail that says you just went from the Forest Service to Ogden City to Joe Schmo's private land. I mean, it just goes, and you just don't think about that. I think that's you get really knowledgeable of it, or you think a lot about it once you understand that. As you become part of Trails Foundation, you understand it. That's a big deal, really, here. It's a big deal in some respects that we're so lucky that we've got trails that go across all this land. And the good news is, as a trail user, you don't even know it.
Yeah.
But from a trail maintenance and trail building perspective, it's a big deal, because you can't do stuff on trails without the owner giving you permission to do it. And so, as you just said, you move down the BST, within a half a mile, you could have 3 property owners, two cities, a national forest, and you're trying to maintain that. You got to get permission from all those people technically to do it, and it's just a pain, really.
Yeah.
When you get right down to it.
What about the cost of trails? Was that surprising to you to kind of get a better understanding? I'm asking you questions that pop up a lot. Like, when I talk to different people, they don't understand why a trail's not built here, right? Or it does cost X amount of dollars, and they're like, well, I could just give me a shovel, I can build it for a lot cheaper. Was that something that maybe was a little surprising as well, as like the cost to build new trail?
I think so. I mean, I had a idea that it wasn't cheap, but the true cost, as we now know from having built trails and know what it costs to build them. And, when I first came on, we as a group were not technically building trails. We were hiring people to build trails.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found out what we're paying people to build trails, it was surprising. I mean, because you just don't think about a dirt trail being as expensive as they are. But then you start to find out, it's trails are not, in a lot of cases, easy to build, and they're technical, right? In some respects, cases, they're more technical than roads, just because of the fact that you got loose dirt to work with. You got to get the water off as quick as you can. It's just all sorts of stuff you got to be concerned about that you don't think about that as just a trail user. You don't know that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, I'm the same way. I've been using trails for as long as I can remember. But it is those nuances, right? Like, looking at a section that you want to put a trail in over the course of a year, right? To see what the snow runoff looks like in that area compared to the rain, how it gets dry. You can't just find a piece of property and start right away, because you could come back, a few months later and it's gone, right? Because there are so many variables to building a trail. So I always found that pretty interesting, you know, and it kind of leads me into the next thing, you know, kind of not just about trails, but what do you wish people knew about the Trails Foundation that they may already not know? Like, we're trying to get more, you know, into the public, getting people to know us better, like this trail mixer last week, so we can answer questions. But what do you wish people knew about TFNU that they may not know?
I think one of the things that we as an organization really have been working on, but it's still not, I don't believe, universally known, is the fact that these trails that we use around here are free, but they're not free because if we weren't out there doing stuff, pretty soon they'd be in a position where you couldn't use them. And I think people don't really know, not enough people really appreciate, I think, what we as an organization do to help keep these trails in shape that people can use them. As I keep telling people, you know, trails would be great if we didn't have rain, water, or people using them.
Yeah.
And if you didn't have those three things, if you didn't have water and people, really, trails would be perfect. You'd never have a problem with a trail. It'd be perfect. You never have to maintain it. But unfortunately, around here, we do have water. This year, we're going to have a lot of water.
Yes.
And we have a lot of people. And so trails need to be maintained. And I think that's part of, you know, as we do our outreach and stuff, hopefully people begin to understand that we are a big part of that. I mean, the Forest Service does maintenance at some level, but the Forest Service over the last, at least the last 6-7 years I've been here, has done a relatively minor amount of work for the, you know, for the number of trails they've had. It's all funding. I mean, it's not blaming the Forest Service.
Yeah.
They get what they get and they do with what they have. But still, you know, there's just a lot of trails to be maintained here. And I think that's one of the things. The other thing I don't think people understand about us is that if they do understand that we're maintaining trails, there is this perception, I think, that somehow local entities are providing us money to do that. And the reality is they're not. That really all of the money we get either comes through donations or grants, where we go out and take these donations and get matching grants so we can double the money effectively. And then we use that money to now put a trail crew out on the trails in the summertime to help maintain them. And I think people don't really appreciate the fact that there's not, you know, we're not somehow magically funded by somebody, because we're doing stuff that if we weren't doing it, some of the local government entities would probably have to step up to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's one of the beauties of where we're at is we do, like you mentioned with the Forest Service, you know, we do provide support. Like, they know we're here, we can help. Same with Weber County, Parks and Rec. You know, we've got a great relationship there. We've got a great relationship with Ogden City and the Ogden Trails Network. And I think at the end of the day, for us, you know, a big reason why we did the name change is so people would understand that we were not Weber County funded. Because right. That was a big misconception. Even when I got the job, I thought I was a government employee until I started and found out I wasn't. But I think that's a big thing is, you know, as you mentioned, there's so many miles of trail in our community. It is, I mean, let's face it, with what we have, it's almost impossible to keep up with everything. You've really got to pick and choose your projects. You know, I think we're getting into a better place where we're finding the bigger projects, trying to knock those out so they, and then hit the smaller ones so they don't become bigger, right? The bigger the problem, you know, I was talking to somebody at our trail mixer the other day and they were like, well, how do I know to report a problem? Cause they just seem so small. And I said, report them when they're small. Cause sometimes we can fix them with, you know, limited work compared if it goes over, you know, so much time. But I think you hit it right on the head is just people understanding that, you know, we have a seat at all these tables, whether it's Wasatch Front Regional Council, the city, the county, we're always there, right? And so even if we can't physically do something or affordably do something, we can let people know what's going on. So what do you think, kind of come across that, what would you say our biggest challenges are here? What do you see TFNU's biggest challenges that we face?
Well, I think TFNU suffers the same thing as all nonprofits do, and that is that nonprofits need donations. right? We don't have a, we're not a business, you know, we don't have a revenue stream, we don't have any guaranteed income. So we're always trying to come up with money to do the things we do. And I think that's the same for us as all nonprofits. It's not unique to us, but I mean, that's clearly a challenge. I mean, we've got some, you know, from a pure trails perspective, I mean, we've got the problem of multiple owners of the property that we deal with. I mean, that's a day-to-day challenge that we, that, you know, that we face. I think, you know, we've got just what we were talking about before in terms of getting people to understand what we do and what we are doing. That's a challenge in itself, in that I think the more we can do that, it all, it's all holistic, right? The more people understand what you do, the more likely they are to want to help, either by donating or volunteering or whatever, because they appreciate what you're doing. I think the as you mentioned, the various government entities around and that we deal with, they appreciate us, I think, because a lot of the work you've done and, you know, connecting us with the county and the city and the various organizations in the area, they appreciate what we do. But I'm not sure that that translates directly into the general population. So I still think that's a, you know, a fairly, that's a big issue around here. And the fact that, like you said, a lot of the Forest Service, a lot of our trails are on Forest Service, and it's just a challenge. It's not a insurmountable challenge, but we just need to work with the Forest Service, which we're doing. And I think we have a really good relationship with the Forest Service now in terms of their ability to be willing to let us work on the forest. And we built up some credibility with them through, just because we've shown them that we do know what we're doing when we build trails and maintain trails. We're not just a itinerant bunch of hacks out here just, you know, digging a hole in the trail so the water run off. I mean, you know, we know what we're doing. Yeah. And so I think that, but that's a continuing, it's a continuing thing as we go down the pike to make sure that everybody that we need to work with understands the value we bring to the table.
Well, it kind of, you're great at this. A segment kind of goes into it when we talk about the challenges, and then you bring up the relationship with the entities and how we're moving forward with the Forest Service in a better way. So that kind of spins me to the next one. Since you've been here, what are some of the key successes at TFNU? Some that, like, you are proud of, you know, being a part of the organization. What are some of those successes that you can look on and I don't know, kind of just, you know, pat ourselves on the back a little bit? What are some of those successes you see? Some of the ones you think about most?
I think there's actually quite a few I'm pretty happy about. One of them is the relationship that we built up with, like, Weber County. Because I think, you know, over the last 6 or 7 years, our relationship with Weber County has gotten a lot better, to the point where they acknowledge that we are effectively providing a service to the county by maintaining and building trails. I mean, I think the success we've had in North Fork Park with the Weber County Parks and Rec, I mean, anybody who's been to North Fork Park knows that North Fork Park is a world-class place.
Yeah.
And it's become that in the last 5 or 6 years because we, Trails Foundation, has been an integral part of building and expanding the trail network up there. And that flows over into the wintertime when Ogden Nordic, or another great nonprofit, is allowing North Fork Park to become a winter trail mecca. So, you know, North Fork Park is an amazing place, and I'm just super excited about the fact that we've been part of that, and because it's one of those places where you feel like you ought to be advertising, but on the other hand, you don't want anybody else to show up. So, you know, it's a tough thing in that regard. I think I think the fact that we've done a lot in terms of trying to educate people and acknowledging the fact that we've got multiple trail users and that as part of the campaign we're trying to push, that we're all trail users. We're not necessarily bikers, hikers, equestrians. We're trail users, and we have multi-use trails, and so we've got to be able to live together and respect each other and do our thing. And I think the work that you and we as an organization have done, I'm extremely happy about. I think one of the biggest successes, from my own personal feeling, is the fact that for the last basically 4 summers, we've had a trail crew.
Yeah.
Where in the past we didn't have that. We put together volunteer things where volunteers can, but we actually put together a trail crew that could actually go out and do real trail tread maintenance as well as just brush work. And that's a big change, as I mentioned before. And I'm extremely proud about that, because I've been pushing that since day one, since I got on the board, that I think maintenance is really a big deal. And so, you know, that and connected to that is the success we've had with the Forest Service getting to the point where they're wanting our help, as opposed to not necessarily wanting our help. So yeah. I've been very happy with all that stuff, and I think we've just made leaps and bounds and great things.
Well, it's funny you say those things, because as I listen to you, it kind of goes back to the relationship part, right? Because we talk about North Fork Park. So much of that has to do with relationships and trust, right? Like Jen and Todd and Weber County Parks and Rec. I mean, if they didn't trust us, if they didn't give us the opportunity, right, we couldn't help, you know, so that partnership. And the same with like the Forest Service, you know, with Sean and the crew there. So, and Ogden Nordic is another great example. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to take just a quick second. I don't do this often, but I'm going to tip my hat to Ogden Nordic this year. The amount of snow that they've received Absolutely. This year, and the way they're out there nonstop making sure you can use those trails. Holy cow. And that is another organization that it's volunteer based. I think same thing. They got one or two people that's on staff, but it amazes me when I see the people can get out there, to be honest with you, because of what they do. But again, another great partner of ours. And but I think that goes back, as you mentioned, those successes, as I go through my head, I can remember conversations with those key people, right? And just, again, not just, you know, us doing or helping with their ideas or that. It's just the trust, right? It's like, hey, come, let's do this together, right? These collaborations and these things. So those are some of the things when you talk about those, I was thinking, man, these are good things, you know, the partnerships we have and the trust, hopefully, that they have in that we can do the right thing. What else you got? Any other successes that really resonate with you? I know, like you mentioned, the trail maintenance one is a big one. And that was before I came on. I remember you talking about it. And then when we did jump into that world, it was scary at first because we didn't know what to expect. And then we got really excited, and then we got really level-headed, right?
Well, you know, in terms of specifics, I think the Blackner's Bend area is probably an area that I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah.
It's an area that I think most people don't even know what we're talking about when we say Blackner's Bend. But that piece of land that we purchased, and we purchased that just about the time I came on the board 6 or 7 years ago, at the corner of 89 and 84 on this, it's the northwest corner of 89 and 84. There's about 60 acres down there that we bought on the south side of the river. Because the plan has always been to push the Weber River Parkway all the way up the south side of the river, right up to where it hits 89, and then go across the river there and go back up through Uinta to create a complete circuit for the Centennial Trail, as we've called it. And the fact that we've actually, what we've done at Blackner's Bend, in putting in a really nice trail, but also in using that opportunity that we own this to partner with people like Trout Unlimited and DWR and the other people in the natural resources area to do some things with the river there to create some fish habitat. We really helped the bluehead sucker, I think it is, and the Bonneville cutthroat trout by providing some habitat for them to raise their kids in. So there's a lot. That's a really neat thing out there, and I'm still hopeful that one of these days we'll be able to get that trail all the way through so that you can actually, you know, bike or hike or whatever all the way from downtown Ogden to 89 without ever going out on the road. I mean, it's just going to be fantastic. The other thing I think is a success is the fact that we now have members. I think the membership campaign that we put together to give people an opportunity to give back to the trails by giving to us that we can then turn right around and put back into the trails, I think that's been real successful. It's been successful not only in raising money for us, which clearly was one of the reasons we did it, but also in giving people some ownership. You know, you feel like you're doing something, you know, you're part of the deal. So I think that to me was the other big success we've had.
You know, I love the way you phrase that, because talking to people that are members, you know, a lot of times that was, it wasn't so much the money. It was more like we feel bought into it. We feel like when there's something done, we feel like we were a part of it. And obviously they are, right? I mean, we couldn't do it without the support, but it is. It's being a member. It's being a part of the organization. And that's how we try to treat that as well. So that's something a little bit different than just saying, here's $5 a month or whatever it is. It's like, no, you were part of this project. You did have, you know, because I have people saying, I'm a member, but only $5 a month. I'm like, that's fantastic. You know, like that, I would never shake my head at that. That's a great one. And we joke about it a lot in the office and with the organization. It's a cup of coffee a month, right? It's a cup of coffee for me, cause I drink black coffee, no cream, no sugar, but I know it's a lot. It's less than coffee for some people that do all the fancy stuff. So, no, I agree with you on that one. It's a great way for people just to kind of show support, not just on a financial level, but, showing their support in other ways. So I'm going to ask you one more TFNU question, then we're going to get into something different. What does the future of Trails Foundation look like in your eyes in the next 5 years? Like if you could vision what you want it to become within the next 5 years in your eyes, what does it look like?
I think what Trails Foundation is really shooting to become is what I've heard you say, which is an essential community service as opposed to just another nonprofit. We are really providing a service to the community that the community needs. And at one level, we're the only one providing it. And I think as we go down the pike, that's really where we want to be. We want to be there. We want people to realize that. And that is what I think TFNU needs to become. There's a lot of stuff built into that in terms of where we are. I think, you know, from a pure operational point of view, I think TFNU in 5 years needs to have built up a membership base, potentially developed an endowment of some sort so that we can feel like we're sustainable and we're not dependent each year on people being willing to just donate. We need to have some sort of underlying way to make sure we can continue to operate. And I think that's why that will allow us to be here in 10 years. We won't have to worry about having a bad year and all of a sudden we don't have any money because the economy goes in the toilet. I mean, we were really lucky during the pandemic, which is a perfect example of that sort of thing. We were really lucky that we came through the pandemic as well as we did. But a lot of that was because people, I think, still realize that we were here doing something that during the pandemic they really wanted to do, which was to get out on the trails.
Yeah.
You know, because you could get out and enjoy being outside. You didn't have to be up close and personal to anybody. So it was we provided a real resource in that regard. The other thing I think where I want TFNU to be in 5 years is I want us to get to that point I was talking about before where 90% of the people who use the trails know that Trails Foundation is a major player and is really helping them enjoy their free trails. And because there's nobody here that uses the trails that doesn't realize that the Ogden area and Weber County and northern Utah really have some of the best, this is one of the best trail systems in the country. And if you look at it for user per mile of trail, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Because you go to other places, may have really nice trail systems, but it's like forced marches going down the trail because there's so many people trying to use it. We have a lot of people, but we just have a lot of trails. And so I think this is a fantastic place, and I think we just need to make sure that we're connected to those trails in a way that everybody recognizes us for doing that.
Yeah.
And dear and near to my heart is that 5 years from now, we still have at least one and maybe two trail crews out every summer maintaining trails.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
And that to me is really where we ought to be.
Well, I'm going to shift gears. We've talked about TFNU a lot, but as you mentioned in your bio, you're a big trail user. You're out there all the time. So a few questions. One, in our area, right, northern Utah, what are some of your favorite local trails and why? And you get out to all of them, so this should be hard.
Cheryl, my wife and I, have, you know, we like to think we've hiked almost every trail in at least Weber County, so we're familiar with almost all the trails. So when you told me you were going to ask me this question, I went to her. I said, "So Cheryl, what are our favorite trails?" She says, "Well, I don't know how you pick one." So I tell you what I did. So I couldn't pick one either. There's too many. There's too many good trails here to pick one and slight the rest of them. So I made up a list here of kind of categories of trails.
I like it.
So the first one is, if I want to go hiking for exercise, I want to go aerobic, I want to make sure that I'm getting my heart up where it needs to be and I'm going to feel tired when I get done, Malin's is a good one. Lewis Peak is another good one.
Yeah.
Ben Lomond's another good one. So all those are really good for doing that kind of thing. If I want to go have breakfast, which we do a lot, I go up to the North Ogden Divide. I go up the Ben Lomond side about a mile and a half to where the overlook is looking in the Ogden Valley. There's a nice couple of rock ledges. You sit there, drink your coffee, eat your granola and fruit, and just enjoy the heck out of watching the pelicans come soar by and they're, you know, while you're eating. Another one that's kind of unique that we like, it's part of the Lewis Peak hike. It's the first part, which is really the toughest part. When you come off the divide,
yes, it is.
It's kind of like doing Malin's. You just go straight up for about a mile and a half. But when you get there, if you go up late in the afternoon on the right day of the month, you can sit there, enjoy drinking whatever you'd like to drink, and watch the sunset. And just as the sun sets, you can flip around and watch the full moon come up over the backside of Ogden Valley. And
that's amazing.
It is really a neat experience, and I recommend it, although I don't want to recommend it too highly because I don't want too many people up there when I'm there. If you want to hike the BST, I would say the best stretch of the BST is from the North Ogden Overlook Trailhead off the North Ogden Overlook Road, North Ogden Divide Road, go south all the way through Coldwater Canyon and come out on the south end of Coldwater Canyon. That's got to be, Coldwater Canyon itself is one of the prettiest stretches of the BST we've got. Just an amazing piece of work and really different than the rest of the BST. I recommend it if you haven't ever been that. If you just want to go somewhere and hike forever and hike something different and interconnect yourself, North Fork Park is it.
Yeah.
You can twist and turn, take another trail, and end up, you can do a different hike there every day of the week for a month and a half, and you might run over the same piece of trail, but it wouldn't be the same exact way you went because we built so many interconnecting trails. If you just want a quick hike, not quick, but a scenic hike, I'd say East Fork, Middle Fork, Icebox.
Yeah.
Going from Art Nord. It's a nice little 6 or 7 mile loop. It's gorgeous. Really a gorgeous hike. The salmon hike in the fall, it's Skullcrack up at Causey. Can't beat that for a nice payoff at the end. Nice shady hike in the summertime. If you like shade, Ogden Overlook.
Yeah.
Majority of that hike, once you get into the single track, is really for summertime is really nice because it's almost all shady. the most secret trail, one that most people don't know about, and I hate to talk about it on a podcast like this, is the backside of Sardine. The little stretch on the backside of Sardine, and I'm not even going to tell you how to get there, is one of the prettiest pieces. It's not very long. It's probably a quarter of a mile at most once you get back there. But it's a gorgeous piece of trail on the west side of Sardine Peak. And then in the wintertime, although we snowshoe all these things, same things I just talked about, probably the nicest payoff in the wintertime is you can do Green Pond to Strawberry.
Oh.
And you can stop and have a beer or whatever you like and have lunch and then snowshoe back.
Yeah.
And it's just a nice to have a payoff. You even have a bathroom to use. It's really nice. So that's my list.
Well, it's interesting because I like how you categorize it, because people ask me that question a lot. I do a lot of mine by seasons, right? Because you kind of mentioned a little bit there, like, in, you know, the snow and everything else. But there's certain pieces of trail that I have to go to certain times of year, right? This little, and it could be 20 feet. Right. But it's just these little pictures in my head of when it's snow, where do I go? I know right away where I'm going. There's the little tunnel there, you know, on the BST that's got all the trees overgrown that people love. And so there's different spots, but it's hard. It's really hard because I get that so many times. Favorite trail. I'm like, oh, man, am I, like you mentioned, am I out for something short with my dog? Am I out there with my kids? Am I out there with, you know, running with my wife, whatever that is? So that's always neat. But the beauty of what you're just talking about, you, I will say this with a very, very high level of confidence. I don't think I know of anybody else in my life that has traveled as much as you have in places that some I haven't really heard of. But the beauty of it, me and my wife talk about this, is you would never know having a conversation. It's out of the blue sometimes. You'd be like, oh yeah, I've been to New Zealand. I've been on that trail. And I'm like, what? You know? Oh yeah, we did Mont Blanc. We did this. And I'm like, what is happening to me right now? Like, you, and then it's like, well, the first time we went there, I'm like, well, you've been there more than once. Like, I can't even get there. So you're a very well-traveled trail user, not just traveled, but you're a very well-traveled trail user. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because this is one of my favorites, if you had a Mount Rushmore, top four trails you've ever been on anywhere, what would you, and I know this is going to be hard because you've done some stuff that I hope one day I get an opportunity to do some. What's your Mount Rushmore of favorite trails you've ever been on?
So once again, since you told me you were going to ask me this, I went to Cheryl and said, okay, how do we do this? And we started listing all these trails, and it's tough. I mean, as you mentioned, I've been very lucky in that since I've retired, and a few times we started doing this in, like, in 2007. I retired in 2011, but in 2007, I had a coworker who got married and went on his honeymoon to Switzerland, and he brought these pictures back, and he was hiking from village to village. And I thought, man, this sounds, whoa, this is really pretty neat. I could get into this, you know. I was way past backpacking, you know. But this was like you hike from one village to another, and you stay in one guest house or one three-star hotel or one refugio or something. And, you know, you have a meal and a hot shower. And so in Europe, I found out that This is really well developed over there. So my wife and I just started getting into this and doing it, and we were just lucky enough to be able to. And so as we thought about all the places we've been, it's tough to pick four that you like. They all have something about them that you liked. But as we tried to do something, because I knew you were going to ask me, I did come up with a list. So I will say that the just in terms of the overall, both the hike, the experience, the food, the culture, all that, probably the one I remember the most is the Tour de Mont Blanc, as you mentioned. And that's a 9-day hike. We did it in 9 days. Some people do it in 19 hours. Some people do it in 14 or 15 days, but we took 9. And you walk entirely around Mont Blanc, starting in Chamonix and ending in Chamonix. And you go through 3 countries, Italy, Switzerland, France. And it's tough hiking. This is not a walk in the park kind of stuff, but It was really a lot of fun, and I would recommend that to anybody who ever thinks about doing this kind of stuff. The other place is Patagonia. We hiked in Patagonia, and it was hard to – we did a bunch of hiking down there, and it was all really gorgeous and amazing. The one single hike down there that probably stands out is one called a hike from El Chalten that goes up to a little place called Laguna de los Tres, I think is the name. It's a lake. It's a decent hike, but the payoff is at the end because you're sitting on this at the side of this lake, and if you've ever seen pictures of Patagonia, especially climbing pictures of Patagonia, people go to climb Fitzroy and the Cerro Torre. There are these pinnacles of granite that come up out of the ground, and people climb them. Not me, but other people. But you're sitting there, and this view across this lake is just amazing. The Dolomites, yeah, God, the view, the hikes, it's just everywhere we went in the Dolomites, it was just amazing. I can't pick out a specific one. There's a place called the Alpe de Suisse, which is this great big plateau-like place that you hike down into and then up and out of and surrounded by mountains. It's fantastic. But the whole place just has mile after mile of vistas and fantastic trails and, you know, good hikes. And you just, in the refugios, places you can stay where you're off the grid and are really nice, been there forever. So really like that. And the fourth one would be Switzerland, just in general, because we started there with we've hiked in Switzerland now 3 times. We've primarily been to a place called the Bernese Oberlin, where if anybody's listening to this, you can pull out a map where Grindelwald, Wingen, Lauterbrunnen, Muren, Kandersteg, Grisalp, that's the area. And we've hiked right through there. We've done it twice. We did it the first time by ourselves, just my wife and I, and then friends heard about it. They said, hey, we want to do that.
So we want to go.
Why don't you go again? So we did, and we had 2 other couples come with us, and then we were lucky enough for our 50th wedding anniversary. That's sort of telling my age now, isn't it? 50th wedding anniversary, we went and spent the month in Muren and hiked out of there because it's just a fantastic little Carlist village up on this plateau. It's just, it's an amazing place. So I highly recommend you doing that. I felt bad about leaving the U.S. out. So I did pick out just a few things that we've done in the U.S. that we really enjoyed. One was hiking into the Sperry Chalet and Glacier. Sperry Chalet, unfortunately, got burned down here about 3 or 4 years ago, but it's back. We did the 14-mile hike in, and that is one amazing hike. So if anybody's thinking about going and you can get into the Sperry Chalet, because it is hard to get a reservation. But if you get into it, take the 14-mile hike in, not the 6 or 7-mile hike in. Do the 14-miler. It's worth it. Gorgeous.
So where's that at for people that may not know where that is?
Glacier National Park. Okay. Glacier National Park. So if you don't know where that is, look it up. down and back in the Grand Canyon, that was a nice hike. Recommend that. I was lucky enough to stay at the bottom for one day, so at least
Phantom
I didn't
Ranch.
Have to at Phantom Ranch. Yeah. So didn't have to turn around and hike back out the next day, which was good because my legs were – by the time you hike down, your legs are jelly, I can tell you that. The hike out was easy compared to going down. And then we went over and did one 14er in Colorado, Quandary Peak out of Breckenridge. And I think the thing about that is the fact that I've just done a 14er. It's in and of itself. It's a walk. It's not a technical climb or anything. But, you know, at 14,000 feet, you're breathing pretty funny. And you're hiking up there pretty funny, too, because you're walking for 3 or 4 minutes and you're stopping and you're walking for 3 or 4 minutes and stopping. So anyway, so there we go. That's me. That's my mounts of trails. New Zealand's fantastic. I hate to leave it out.
I was going to say my one, I'm like, Mont Blanc is probably my bucket list, but then New Zealand.
We did the Queen Charlotte track and the Abel Tasman track in New Zealand, both those are fantastic. They've got a bunch of different treks down there. They're all great. New Zealand's a fantastic place. If you ever get a chance to go, it's definitely worth the trip.
Well, I'll tell you, it's, you know, being the on the board at Trails Foundation, the board chair, I think your experience in the trail realm kind of speaks for itself. As you're going through that, I just keep thinking, well, how do I hit like three of those in my lifetime?
And Japan has some great backcountry trails too. The Kamano Kodo, if you ever get a chance, is a great pilgrimage trail, kind of like the Camino de Santiago in Spain. In fact, it's a sister trail to the Camino called the Kamano Kodo. It's great too. I mean, I couldn't not pass.
Now we're just hiking or continent hopping now. Yeah, trying to find new places to go. I like the part we said I didn't want to leave the U.S. off the list, but that was actually pretty funny.
There's not many places you can hike end to end in the, you know, like hotel to hotel in the U.S. Places are too far apart, so it's different.
Well, I've had friends that have done that over in Europe, and again, pictures and stories, and I just think, well, someday, you know, that's probably the number one on my list is the Mont Blanc, taking a little more time than the 19-hour one you spoke about that's coming too common. But
well, I'm heading to southern Italy. I'll let you know how that is when I get back.
You heading there this year? Nice.
A month from now.
Well, there you go, hitting more stuff. So, and that's not even the end of that, so.
Yeah.
Well, I know... as executive director here, I work with you very closely, quite a bit, being the board chair. And I just know since you've been here, you've just made your mark on the organization and with everything you're doing. And it's great to hear what in your eyes, the successes and the challenges. I think out there, a lot of people, I love the essential community service thing. I wish I could say I made that up, but our good friends at United Way started talking about that long before I did. But it is something that... I think as an organization is good to have the board we have, a lot of like-minded people that are volunteering their time to helping this organization grow and do more in the community. So I think we've got a really great recipe there. And by saying that, if you're interested in becoming a board member, you can head over to our website, and we do have a little form to fill out there. We're always in the market for new board members, and we keep that information on file when we're ready, and there's a spot. But ultimately, though, you know, we want to hear from the trail users. We're always striving to do more in the community and doing the best we can, and it starts with you out there. So, Mike, thanks for taking some time today, letting people get to know the board chair a little bit more, and also probably writing down a bunch of places they want to go. I know I couldn't spill 95% of what you spit out, but I think I could have said them out loud to my phone or something, and it could have found them for me. So, but yeah, thanks for all you do for the organization and the community, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Eric. It's been fun talking.
All righty.